This is Barbara Ridenour with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated May 29th, 2015. We'll continue with the obituaries. Dorothy Edith Ashenhurst, 86, of Shelbyville, died 4:19 p.m. Wednesday, May 27th, 2015. Funeral services will be held at 10 a.m. Saturday, May 30th, in Howanyaki Funeral Home, Shelbyville. Visitation will be from 9 to 10 a.m. Saturday in the funeral home. Casual attire is requested. Burial will be in Graceland Cemetery, Decatur. Memorials may be made to the American Cancer Society. Alice Horan, 81, of Decatur, died Tuesday, May 26, 2015. A Mass of Christian burial will be held at 10 a.m. Saturday, May 30th, at Holy Family Catholic Church. Burial will follow in Friends Creek Cemetery, Argenta. Visitation will be this evening, beginning at 4 until 7 p.m. at Dawson and Wyckoff Funeral Home, Mount Zion. Memorials may be made to Holy Family Catholic Church. Dolores Little, 81, of Shelbyville, died Wednesday, May 27, 2015. Funeral services will be held at 12 o'clock p.m. Saturday in the Lockhart Green Funeral Home. Visitation will be from 10 a.m. until service time. Burial will be later at Mount Emblem Cemetery in Elmhurst, Illinois. Memorials may be made to the Shriners Children's Hospital, Chicago. Carol L. Stevens, 72, of Decatur, died Tuesday, May 26, 2015. Honoring her wishes, cremation will take place at Graceland Fairlawn Cremation Center. There will be no public services. Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home is in charge of services. M. L. Bud Waldrop, 80, of Decatur, died Friday, May 22, 2015. Memorial services will be held at 3:30 p.m. on Monday, June 1st, at 2015 at Grace United Methodist Church, Decatur. Brentlinger and Earl Funeral Home, Decatur, is handling the arrangements. Memorials may be made to Grace United Methodist Church of Decatur. We'll continue now with letters to the editor. Don't give terrorists what they want. There are several legitimate purposes to consider in selecting a sentence. Punishment itself is legitimate. Reformation or rehabilitation should also be goals for those who are not executed. The cost of punishment is important. It has actually become more expensive in some jurisdictions to execute than give a life sentence without parole, because of all the appeals and other court activity that must follow a death sentence. But for the Boston Marathon bomber, the greatest consideration ought to be deterrence, that is, discouraging future acts of terrorism. Many Americans, possessed of the Western mind, assume the great deterrent to a criminal is the death penalty. But in the case of a terrorist like this, that is wrong. These terrorists want to die, convinced that they will immediately go to heaven. If they think they will spend only a short time in prison before execution, they will actually be encouraged to commit atrocities by the thought of the promised immediate paradise. But they know they will be required to spend decades if they know they will be required to spend decades in an American prison before they die, they will think twice about attacking us. As for Americans who still insist on the death penalty, look, this terrorist is going to die one way or the other, either easily and painlessly with the lethal injection, or in prison, painfully like the rest of us from cancer, heart disease, whatever, after years of misery in prison. President Obama can postpone the execution of the terrorist indefinitely, and he should. They want to die. Let's not give them what they want. Signed, Alan Shearer of Decatur. Thumbs up, thumbs down. Thumbs up to all the Memorial Day ceremonies that were held throughout Central Illinois this past holiday weekend. While Memorial Day is the unofficial start of summer and a time to enjoy the outdoors, it is also important to remember the significance of the day and to take time to remember those who served and made the ultimate sacrifice. The many ceremonies accomplished that with reverence and style. It should also be noted that the impetus for Memorial Day was created by the Grand Army of the Republic, which was started in Decatur following the Civil War. Thumbs up to the annual CASAS for CASA playoff raffle, which raised a record $34,000 for the organization. Also thanks to raffle winner Ari Anderson, one of the two playhouses was donated to Dove Inc.'s domestic violence shelter. Anderson is a former court-appointed special advocate in Macon County and a volunteer and board member for Dove. She purchased 50 raffle tickets with the intent to donate the playhouse if she won. Thumbs up to the Maroa Forsyth High School Scholastic Bowl team, which will be competing this weekend in the National Academic Quiz Tournament in Rosemont, Illinois. The team has been practicing hard since qualifying for the national tournament, which will feature more than 200 in the top high school scholastic bowl teams. Thumbs up to the Decatur citywide cleanup, which culminated last week with a massive effort. Many of the 120 volunteers that worked to clean up areas last Friday were interns from Archer Daniels Midland Company, which spent a portion of their orientation cleaning up areas branching out from the Decatur Civic Center. Other activities included efforts from city staff to clean up specific areas of the city with assistance from Advanced Disposal, which hauled away full dumpsters for free. The effort also led to the collection of more than 1,000 tires, with R&R Services of Illinois donating the disposal costs. The community effort was impressive. Thumbs up to the Decatur branch of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, which celebrated Decatur this year during its 75th annual Freedom Fund banquet. There is so much going on in this town. We're celebrating you, Branch Secretary Mildred Bond told the audience of about 250. The NCAA local branch honored local historical figures Marie Gray Baker and Joe Slaw and presented the annual Joe Slaw Civil Rights Award to James Gavin. Awards were also presented to high school students and to 19 game changers in the areas of education, health, community service, public safety, and more. Tim Kaine's column, Same Song, New Words for Musicians. Back at the time where compact discs were the place where we could get music and file sharing went by the singular name Napster, the music industry faced a conundrum. The industry's corporations needed to convince its customers that its product had value. Meanwhile, some of the same corporations had CD clubs. Members could join for a too-good-to-be-true offer of 7 or 9 or even a dozen discs for a penny. The same products, but hardly the same value. Those corporations then started suing their customers for file-sharing music. The band Metallica became the very public face of the music industry's end of the discussion. Instead of a musical community, we had a war among corporations, recording artists, and music lovers. It was so much easier when we could just all hate the corporation. The exchange should be a fair one. The corporation sets the price, distributes to the customer who pays the price, and that money is divided fairly between corporation and creator/artist. That system stopped working for any number of complex reasons, and it's now given way to another debate from similar sides, similar frustrations, and potentially similar results. Streaming audio is the most recent and revolutionary method of delivering music to listeners. Services like Pandora and Spotify deliver an ongoing stream of music, eventually personalized per user by thumbs-up, thumbs-down evaluation of songs, crossed with some logarithms. In effect, each person programs their perfect personal radio station. Only these don't have news breaks or special events or half-dozen commercial jingles that wrap themselves around the inner workings of our brains. Some musicians are unhappy about this arrangement, just as when radio first came on the scene. Corporations and companies and savvy performers were unhappy with their product being given away free via government-regulated airwaves. The amount of money performers see from services like Spotify is either shameful or pathetic. Roseanne Cash famously made noise about the paucity of payment late last year by pointing out that her songs had been streamed by Spotify 600,000 times over an 18-month period. Her royalties, a mere $104. The issue is complex. Cash's songs have been spun more than 500,000 times on the service, so that's reaching a significant audience. Or is it? Taylor Swift pulled her music from Spotify late last year, but in October her song Shake It Off received 43.6 million plays, or 43 million more plays for one song for 1 month than the entirety of Cash's plays for 18 months. Spotify's payout to Swift would have been around $300,000, based on formulas Spotify's issues. But Swift and her record company said Spotify paid just $500,000 total. Now, no one is mistaking Swift with Cash in terms of current popularity, but there's a whole range of performers who receive even less than Cash, and a fair number who receive more. And some at the top of that mountain decided to take matters in their own hands. Just a couple of months ago, along came Tidal. It's another streaming service. Among the service's 16 owners, there are Jay-Z, Beyoncé, Rihanna, Kanye West, Nicki Minaj, Jack White, Madonna, Daft Punk, Arcade Fire, Usher, Alicia Keys, Chris Martin, and Jason Aldean. As Pitchfork called them, the 1% of the recording industry. Tidal has fewer than 1 million subscribers. Spotify claims more than 50 million users, more than 10 million of whom have paid subscriptions. While Tidal's subscriber base will increase, it's still going to take time for its checks to match Spotify's. But what should be more disconcerting for musicians is thinking back to the legal battles over Napster. That peer-to-peer service was squashed by hundreds or thousands of easy-to-use download services sprung in the wake of Napster's demise. Piracy skyrocketed to numbers that have dipped only as listeners have more streaming options made available. In Cash's complaints about streaming services, she posted on Facebook that if you stream, it's just dressed-up piracy. While it's easy to understand Cash's frustrated point of view, that's an unfortunate choice of words, especially for those who pay for their Spotify and Pandora Live 365. It could portend for something even more unfortunate. As artists scramble to monetize the streaming experience, they're forgetting the lesson they should have learned from the Napster battle. Sometimes the devil is far easier to handle and work with than the devils who are waiting to meet you. Dear Abby, politics served with profanity makes dinner hard to swallow. Dear Abby, my sister-in-law and her live-in boyfriend, Bud, get together with us for dinner and outings. We enjoy each other's company, but over the last couple of years he's been making disparaging remarks on the subject of politics. We do not belong to the same political party, and his remarks make our blood boil. Bud knows we belong to the other party, but continues his barrage peppered with profanity. It's impossible to have an intelligent debate with him before the cursing starts spewing out. A difference of opinion is tolerated, but when it's laced with profanity, it becomes hard to swallow. My husband feels the same way. I would tell Bud to head south as far as he can go, were it not for my sister-in-law's feelings. She's pretty close to my husband. I thought it better not to say anything during these dressing downs, but I don't know how much longer I can keep my mouth shut without blasting him. How should I handle this? Ready to blow in Ohio. Dear Ready to Blow, you and your husband should pick up the phone and call your sister-in-law. Tell her that as much as you love her and Bud, the political discussions have gotten out of hand, and therefore there will be no more discussions about politics when you get together, period. If Bud starts in, your husband should not take the bait. You are both to say, we'll never agree on this, so let's change the subject. It's about privacy. Dear Abby, after 12 years of marriage, my husband and I finally have our first child, a little girl. Yes, I was very happy to have a child on the way, but I was also very depressed. My OBGYN had to put me on antidepressant medication for it. I felt that only family should know, and while I was pregnant, my husband went along with it. But now, if someone asks about my pregnancy or jokes about us having a second child, he will tell them he's not sure because of during my pregnancy I was depressed. When I ask him, please, not to tell people about it, he says, why not? You have nothing to be ashamed of. How can I get him to understand for me it's not about shame, but privacy? Signed, New Mom in Louisiana. Dear New Mom, while I agree that depression is nothing to be ashamed of, I also agree with you that some things should be kept private, and your medical history is one of them. Perhaps your husband would understand if you analogize it with a man using Viagra. While he may not use the little blue pill with abandon, many men would prefer folks to assume they didn't need the pharmaceutical assistance. Staff blogs. A word they use in Hawaii. Cameron Crowe's new movie, Aloha, which opens Friday, is coming under its share of heat and then some. There's a protest I find curious, primarily because it taught me more than I'd ever imagined about the meaning behind the word used as the title. Native Hawaiians are protesting the use of the word in the title. One of the word that has multiple meanings, not just both hello and goodbye, Native Hawaiian activist Walter Riddy told the Associated Press, they're taking our sacred word, and they're going to make a lot of money off of it. First things first, Crow films don't roll in dough. Only Vanilla Sky and Jerry Maguire have made in excess of $100 million, which might indicate Tom Cruise as responsible for those films' financial success as Crow's efforts. Second, the meaning and use of words evolve. Perhaps it is an issue now to use Aloha as a title for a film, but I immediately thought of a couple of well-known shared events that use the word in a way not dissimilar to how it appears the movie uses it. The Aloha Bowl was a college football bowl game that ran from 1988 to 2000. Most famously, Elvis Presley's 1973 worldwide television concert broadcast was called Aloha from Hawaii via satellite. In neither case does any kind of protest seem to have been raised. If things have changed in the last 15 years, that's okay. But Native Hawaiians are going to have to educate us, just as has been done by Native Americans and other groups who feel their culture has been and is being co-opted in unfavorable, unflattering, and in some cases blasphemous ways. I have no problem with learning about sensitivity and courtesy, but if the debate is about a word that natives use regularly to greet friends and tourists alike, we're all going to need a little more education on what's right and wrong. All of this fuss over a movie that won't bring in $10 million over its opening weekend. On Biz, Rax, Cole Enterprises, Beehive Beauty Boutique. The chance to hunt deer may be 4 months away, but it's open season at Rax, a downtown Decatur country bar that just upgraded to a bar and grill. Owner Greg Meisenhelter added food to the menu earlier this month after officially changing the establishment's name from cats on Merchant at the start of hunting season last year on October 1st. He's been wanting to open a place like this, said Jennifer Gillum, the grill's manager. He's a big hunter himself. Featuring head mounts on the wall and racks of ribs on the menu, the establishment carries the new theme out, even in the music played, which is country, of course. Rax is located at 112 North Merchant Street, is closed Sunday and Monday, and opens at 11 a.m. all other days of the week, closing at 11 p.m. Tuesday through Thursday, and staying open until 2 a.m. Friday and Saturday. For more, find the business on Facebook or call 217-330-7802. That's 330-7802. The Napa Auto Parts retailer in Assumption is now owned by Cole Enterprises. Fairbury-based Cole Enterprises' usual line of work is building grain bins, tower dryers, and related structures for companies like Archer Daniels Midland Company and Cargill Incorporated. But General Manager Jeff Felstall says the company has been looking into expand its auto parts, and the Assumption Napa operation was a perfect fit as it caters to many farm customers. This was another way to take care of our customers, Feldstuhl said. So we have the same customers now who buy Napa stuff from us on the grain side also. Cole Enterprises took over the business earlier in May and hasn't wasted any time growing and expanding things. The range of inventory across the board for all vehicles has been enhanced, and two more hires have brought the full-time crew up to six with two part-timers. Coming this fall is a new building to replace the existing one at 302 South US 51. And we expect to add more people to that building, Felstuhl said. An open house at the existing facility is scheduled for 3 to 8 p.m. today, Friday, from 3 to 8 p.m., not today, Friday, June 12th. It will feature food, a tool sale, and a car and antique tractor show where customers can bring their favorite rides and show them off to win trophies. Felstuhl said Cole Enterprises sees a lot of potential in similar expansions in the future and is shopping for prospects. Yes, absolutely, we're looking, he said, and we're actually in the process of looking at another one right now. Napa Auto Parts in Assumption is open from 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday and has now added 7 a.m. to noon on Saturdays. Call 217-226-3243. That's 226-3243. The Beehive Beauty Boutique, which opened earlier this year in Diedrich, lets you step back in time while experiencing a range of beauty services. The decor is vintage and dates back to the 50s, owner Megan Lumen said. The shampoo bowls and pedicure chairs are about the only furnishings that are new. Located at 121 South Main Street, the Beehive is a full-service salon offering hair services, manicures, pedicures, makeup, spray tanning, facials, and massage therapy, along with hair products, jewelry, purses, and other small items. Hours are Monday through Saturday by appointment, but walk-ins are also welcome. For more, find the boutique on Facebook or call 217-925-5237. That's 925-5237. Back to local news. Arrest made in Paige Martin's murder. Decatur police have arrested Matthew Higgins Vogt, a 22-year-old parolee, for the murder of Paige Mars, a 19-year-old Long Creek resident who was shot to death April 6th. Higgins Vogt has been held without bond in the Macon County Jail since his arrest for armed robbery that same day. On April 3rd, Higgins Vogt and Kelton Snyder, also a 22-year-old parolee, allegedly robbed the Circle K at 1685 South Baltimore Avenue. One of the two suspects was armed with a shotgun. Higgins Vogt and Snyder are both being held in jail without bond after they were arraigned on a Class X charges of armed robbery. Decatur Deputy Police Chief Cody Moore said Thursday that more arrests are expected in the Mars murder as the investigation continues. Her body was discovered about 8 a.m. April 6th near the Sangamon River just west of Lincoln Park, south of the 1100 block of Lincoln Park Drive. An autopsy showed she died of multiple gunshot wounds to her head and chest. Two defendants in the armed robbery case allegedly robbed the Circle K of cash, liquor, and personal items about 2:30 a.m. April 3rd. The incident was captured on the store's surveillance video. In the armed robbery case, the defendants are each facing 6 to 30 years in prison, plus a firearm enhancement of 15 years if convicted. Higgins Vogt was arrested April 8th in connection with the robbery. He was charged with armed robbery, armed with a firearm, April 16th. He entered a plea of not guilty in circuit court 13 days later. Higgins Vogt was appointed a lawyer from the public defender's office. Higgins Vogt was released from prison September 2nd after serving 26 months of a 4-year sentence for a conviction on the charge of aggravated unlawful possession of a weapon. Snyder was arrested about 3:45 p.m. April 6th after police received an anonymous tip linking him to the Circle K robbery. Surveillance video showed that one of the robbers had a similar build to Snyder's, who is 5 feet 4 inches tall and weighs 135 pounds. Snyder was charged with armed robbery armed with a firearm April 9th and entered a not guilty plea April 22nd. He also was assigned a public defender. Both defendants are due in court June 3rd for pretrial hearings in their armed robbery cases. Snyder was released from prison November 3rd after serving 19 and a half months of a 4-year sentence for possession of a weapon by a felon. Train hits semi-truck near Stonington, Blue Mound. A 37-year-old Blue Mound man was injured when the semi-trailer truck he was driving was hit by a freight train Thursday between Blue Mound and Stonington. The driver, whose name was not released, was able to get out of the truck and was taken by Decatur Ambulance to St. John's Hospital in Springfield, Christian County Sheriff Bruce Kettlecamp said. Kettlecamp wasn't sure how the driver got out of the truck, but bystanders found him crawling on an embankment. The collision occurred about 2 p.m. as the train was headed north and the truck was headed east on East County Road 2300 near the intersection of Illinois 48, Kettlecamp said. Parts of the truck were found on each side of the tracks, as tractor and trailer were split apart, Kettlecamp said. The tractor was fully engulfed in flames, he said. The cause of the crash is under investigation, Kettlecamp said. The intersection has no crossing gates, but Kettlecamp said witnesses reported hearing the train's whistle. And finally, here's weird news. Mineral Point, Wisconsin. 20-year-old Wisconsin cheddar makes debut at $209 a pound. A Wisconsin cheesemaker is debuting his 20-year-old cheddar this week that's short in supply and big on price. The cheddar from Hook's Cheese Company of Mineral Point goes on sale Friday at $209 a pound. Most of the 450-pound supply is already spoken for, with orders coming in after the planned sale went public earlier this year, the Wisconsin State Journal reported. It's like a milestone in the cheese industry, said Ken Montelioni, owner of the Artisan Cheese Shop in Madison. There's about 20 pounds of cheese of the cheddar that's unaccounted for, said cheesemaker Tony Hook. The company will start selling it Friday in its store and Saturday at a farmer's market in Madison. That's all we have time for this week's edition, or this Friday's edition of Decatur Herald and Review, dated May 29th, 2015. This is Barbara Ridenour. I look forward to reading with you again soon. Have a good weekend and a pleasant week to follow.